Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. We hope very shortly to have with us the author of Falling to Earth, an Apollo 15 astronaut's journey to the moon, Al Warden. We hope will be with us, but we can't find him at the moment. It doesn't happen very often. I certainly can't talk about going to the moon because only 24 people have gone to the moon. So let me give you his bio, and then we will figure out what we're going to do and try and find him. He was command module pilot for the Apollo 15 mission to the moon in 1971, spent 6 days orbiting the moon and 3 days. Can you imagine being in this position? He was completely alone because the other two guys were walking on the moon. During the return from the moon to the Earth, he conducted the first spacewalk in deep space. He became the first human ever to see both the entire Earth and the moon simply by turning his head. He was an astronaut working on the pioneering Apollo 9 and Apollo 12 missions, as well as the very perilous flight of the Apollo 13. 9 months after he returned from the moon, he received a phone call telling him he was fired and ordering him out of his office by the end of the week. He refused to leave. He has never told the full story about the events that ended his space flight career, but he does in this book, and he is one of only 7 human beings to orbit the moon by himself. Falling to Earth is the name of the book, and we can't find him. It's not good, but we can't find him. So I'm going to chat for a moment, being hopeful that we will find him in the next few moments. Coming up this Thursday, we're a big fan of his work, and we have interviewed John Katz on every single book he has ever written. He's made me seriously consider, when I start raising dogs, seriously consider buying a donkey. And he has written marvelous books about animals and his farm. Going Home is the name of his latest book, and it's what happens when you have to lose an animal. He's a very sensitive writer, and people love his writing and love him. He's going to be with us in studio for the first time on Thursday. He's doing a book signing and an event with the Wisconsin Humane Society. So we thought, well, you can't have John Katz without some dogs. So we're going to have some dogs in the studio as well. We're going to have the best time. We'll put it on Facebook so you can see the dogs and John. And it's a sad topic, but he has done some incredible work lately with therapy dogs. He's been going to hospice with one of his dogs who seems to sense exactly what people need. And it's his last book was about that, and it's just very, very moving. And he'll be with us Thursday at 10 o'clock, so I hope you'll tune in, all of you animal lovers, or those of you who don't even know you could be an animal lover, and once you get an animal, you become an animal lover. So John Katz and a couple dogs. Oh, I can't wait. Won't that be fun? That's Thursday at 10 o'clock. What else can I tell you? I don't know if I have much more to say. I could be speechless here, speechless in Milwaukee. We hope we can talk about the moon and Al Warden's trip there. Can I just tell you a little bit more about him? And then we'll have to give up on this hour. He describes, you know, this time being in the module traveling by himself as being the most isolated human being. It's hard to imagine anybody being more isolated than he was when he was maneuvering this capsule around the moon so far from Earth and totally by himself. He's done some very interesting work. Recently, he was chair of the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation, providing scholarships to exceptional science and engineering students. He ran for the U.S. House of Representatives in Florida's 12th Congressional District, but he lost the Republican primary to State Senator, so he lost that election. And the controversy was that he sold some postal covers to pay for the debts from that, well, unsuccessful campaign. That wasn't the controversy. The controversy was these postal covers, and it was the reason why NASA fired him. And he is very, very apologetic about doing this. It was something just sort of happening, and he agreed to it and realizes that it was a wrong thing. But we'll talk about people who may have made money from some of these space flights. So that's his story, but we can't hear his story because we don't have him with us. Let me see what else is going on. I just was brought the calendar. So any other things I'd like to tell you about? We're going to talk about primaries on Thursday because they've been all changed. Why is that? We'll talk about that Thursday morning at 9, and then it's John Katz at 10 o'clock. Coming up next week, which is our abbreviated pledge drive, I hope you'll join us for that because we're trying to do our pledge in 6 days that normally goes on and on and on and on. I've always thought it was too long, and I think a lot of you think it was too long, so now it's going to be shorter, but it means that we are hopeful that you will step up to the plate, just like the Brewers will tonight. Step up to the plate and help us out with our very important fall pledge drive, which will start next week. Daniel Golden from Boswell Books will be joining us on Tuesday. We'll get great book recommendations. Michael Lewis will join us on Tuesday at 10 o'clock, which would be a very good show. David K. Johnston. David now has a job where he's looking at economic systems all over the world. He's very, very bright and always gives us information that we should know, but things that are not, are underreported is a keen sense of what's going on in the world economy. So that will be on Thursday at 9 o'clock. He was in Singapore the last time we talked to him. I don't know where in the world he'll be next Thursday, but it will be fun to find out. And we'll ask him what he thinks about what's going on in Greece. And also we'll ask him, as we had an hour last talking about protests taking place in the United States, what it is that people are upset about in this country, and if there is a growing movement, amorphous as it may be, to say we're not very happy with the way things are going. What do you do with that? Anything else I want to tell you about? Andy Borowitz is going to join us. Julian Zelizar is going to be with us. The guy who may be the single best talker on the air. He's from Princeton, and he's just very, very smooth and very smart. He's always a great political analyst, so he will be with us. When is that? I hope you're writing all these things down. I'm glad Rhonda did, or I don't know what I'd be doing. July, October 17th, he'll be our All Things Political on the 17th. All right, what's going on? Craig Gilbert is with us. Well, what a surprise. You guys are great. They just found a guest because we can't find the astronaut. And I really have never been. All right, we got him for 10 minutes, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do after that. I'm so sorry Al's not with us. I don't know where he is, but so much for that. It's, at any rate, it's an interesting book, and going to the moon is quite an event. So Craig Gilbert is joining us, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, because Chris Christie is evidently going to announce today. So we have some things to talk about with him. Craig Gilbert?
Hello. Hi. I feel like I'm in outer space.
I feel like I'm in outer space, too. Holy cow. Well, thank you, sir, for helping me out.
It's always a pleasure.
I don't know what I would have said, because I've never been to the moon, you know, although I do look at it. Every time I look at the moon, I think, people walked on that moon. I keep saying that to my son. You know, people walked on that moon. But we don't have the guy who can talk about it. So Chris Christie is going to say yes, huh? That's what you're hearing?
I'm not so sure about that. I've seen conflicting reports about that. So, you know, it's late. We saw Paul Ryan go through this. It's been kind of a crazy process on the Republican side. Obviously, there's enough people that are unhappy with the choices they have that, you know, keeps feeding this frenzy for alternative candidates. But it also, at the same time, as time goes on, it gets more harder and harder for those candidates to do it. I mean, most of the reporting now is that Christie's not going to do it. And I think it would have been problematic for him anyway, because being a Republican from New Jersey is different from being a Republican from Texas, and both good and bad. But it would have been, he would have had some rocky times in the with on some issues with conservatives in the party.
Mm-hmm. It seems as though nobody's very excited about anybody right now, Craig. There's not a whole lot of base Democratic support for the president. There's not a lot of support for the Republicans. Everybody's kind of, we're kind of upset, huh?
Yeah, and I used the phrase a little while ago, the race to the bottom, because we've seen the president's approval ratings sort of dropping like a rock. We've seen congressional approval ratings dropping rock. We've seen approval ratings for both parties in Congress sinking. In fact, the Republicans lower than the Democrats. And so it, in some ways, the dynamic is, you know, who fares worse, not who fares better, but who fares worse in this environment next year when people are unhappy. They're unhappy with incumbents. They're unhappy with the direction of the country. They're obviously very unhappy with the economy. Usually the party of the president suffers the most, but that picture is a little bit complicated because of divided government and because, like I said, everybody's ratings are really poor right now.
The president's trying to get his jobs program passed, which doesn't seem very likely. If he pounds on that and makes himself the guy who has a different plan, even though nobody's going to really support it in Congress, will that help him? And is his heart in it?
I think questions like that are really more marginal than simply the state of the economy. And so, like a lot of things in politics, conditions matter more than messaging. And you can't message your way out of a bad situation. The president has to hope that that there's some positive economic trend next year. And if there isn't, then I think, you know, his ability, his campaign skills and his communication skills could have an impact on the margins. But, no campaign skills and communication skills are great enough to overcome a really, really bad economy.
Mm-hmm. And let's spend a little bit more time talking about the Republican field. It's interesting. Rick Perry was the guy with, well-spoken, looks good, strong statements, kind of captivating guy, and then he's not quite up to the task, it turns out. And yet, it looks like Mitt Romney, who does well when you pair him against Obama in a general race, doesn't seem to be the guy who's capturing the hearts of the Republicans. Who do you think they're going to wind up with? Is it somebody who's not even in the race right now? Could it be?
Well, I guess, I mean, that would be a surprise if it was somebody who's not in the race. Again, we've seen a couple of, candidates that a lot of people in the party think are attractive candidates already say no to kind of late bids. And it is late, even though we're still a few months away from a primary or caucus. But actually, that process has accelerated, too, because as states have begun leapfrogging each other to try to get to the front of the line in the primary calendar, the early states are having to move up, and instead of being in early February, now they're going to be in early January. So that's shortening the process. So I don't think it's going to be somebody who's not even in the race now, and I think what's unpredictable about the field that we have now is exactly what you said. It's that all the candidates have liabilities. Mitt Romney, has a very professional campaign. He's a very professional candidate, but there's things that conservatives don't like about him. He's not lighting anybody on fire. On the other hand, Rick Perry, who certainly had the potential to really energize, grassroots conservatives, has run into problems himself. So, it's not that unusual to have a situation where there's no perfect candidate, or where there's no candidate who both shows general election appeal and really energizes the base. I mean, that's what you want, but that's not easy to find. So I don't think this is a strange situation, but I do think it's unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. We spent last hour talking about the protests that are taking place in Wall Street that are expected to expand in other cities in the country. What are your thoughts about those, Craig? Do you see a whole lot of people, maybe it's an amorphous group, but people who are very unhappy and they're going to form a left version of a Tea Party, or they're going to grow in numbers, or you don't know? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it would be unusual, right? I mean, what would be the parallel historically to this kind of movement? I mean, it's in the U.S. we haven't seen a lot of this. You know, we've seen, there's certainly been populist outpourings in both parties over different issues, but, it's been a while, I think, since you saw a really strong, robust kind of movement based on economic populism on the left. I don't know whether it's going to flower or blossom or grow. But if it did, it would be kind of an unusual event in recent American political history. And obviously, the implications for the presidential campaign are interesting because what is it? You know, the one thing that one concern for Democrats certainly is this sort of energy gap in the parties right now that we saw in 2010 and could see again in 2012. To the degree that people on the left aren't as excited about President Obama as they were in 2008. That's disconcerting for Democrats, and whether you're going to see start to see some new energy on the left, and whether that transfers to support for Democratic candidates up and down the ballot. Oh, those are totally open questions, but they have a big bearing, obviously, on 2012.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think there is a gap here in enthusiasm for either of these parties. There's something else that's going on in the country. Well, let's talk about the Brewers for just a moment.
Good subject.
I know.
Close to all of our hearts.
I know. I just think we should just have baseball go all year long. This team just looks so good. I think we should go to Phoenix tonight.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people have said this, but when they last made the playoffs, you knew that they had weaknesses, and I don't think it was hard to be super optimistic about their prospects. Right now, you get the feeling like they have the potential to beat anybody, and, you know, everything, the aura around the team is good. You know, they've got some just elite hitters that seem unstoppable, and they have solid pitching, and a lot of these other teams are all showing they have flaws. So, and I think the Brewers also, you know, have the potential to generate kind of a fun following outside the state. Kind of, you know, everybody's looking for the darling, people that don't have loyalties to any of the remaining teams. And I think the Brewers kind of fit that bill. Somebody, I think, from Sports Illustrated Rick Riley wrote a column to that effect. You know, he was sort of looking for the most likable team out there, and he settled on Milwaukee for all the obvious reasons.
No doubt about it. The most likable people, the most likable ball club, et cetera. It is fun to see what happens to a community because these are not easy times for a lot of people.
Exactly. And, I mean, everything else, people are being ripped apart in every other way.
Right.
And then, you know, we have the Badgers, the Brewers, and the Packers to kind of rally around. And that, I'm sure you can probably overstate this, but I'm sure on some level, from a civic point of view, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And just finally, because I know you have to run, we're just patching together whatever we can this hour because we can't talk about the moon. I can carry open lines, but not on the moon. So, yeah. What about these primaries? We're going to talk about it on Thursday. What's going on with all these primary date shifts? Is that significant or not?
It moves up the process. It's always hard to know how it affects individual candidates. And, you know, the question, I think, for Wisconsin is how does this augur a longer nominating process? Because that's the only scenario under which Wisconsin matters. Our primary is in April. So it's certainly going to be a longer process on the calendar because the early states have to be earlier. And so instead of starting in early February, we're starting at the end of the year, beginning of the new year. And whether there's a possibility for kind of the Republican equivalent of Clinton Obama, which was just an extraordinarily elongated process that hadn't really happened that way in a long time, that could happen. It could happen because the candidate's weaknesses are offsetting, just like the candidate's strengths in the Democratic process were offsetting in 2008. So, you know, that'll be interesting to watch. Interesting to watch from a kind of a parochial point of view is, you know, Wisconsin's way down the list. We've moved our primary back from February to April to coincide with our spring elections. So it would take an unusual set of circumstances for it to get to Wisconsin, but it could happen.
Do you think there will be a recall effort against the governor of Wisconsin, Craig?
I think there may be. I don't think it's necessarily something that the party leadership is crazy about or super optimistic about, but I think that, you know, there's a grassroots element in this dynamic where you can't control it from the top down. And so if there's an effort from the bottom up to recall Governor Walker, that'll proceed, and how much support they get from labor and from the party financially remains to be seen. There may also be recall efforts against this second class of legislators against a few targeted legislators who were elected in 2008 and who are going to be on the ballot anyway in November 2012, but there could be an effort to try to recall them earlier in the year under the current districts. So it's, you know, it's all things on the table in Wisconsin for the presidential cycle in 2012.
Mm. Thank you so much, Craig, for helping us out. Thank you. Nice
to
hear from you.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Here's what's going on this hour. I'm not sure what's going on, but Rhonda and Chrissy have been finding people for us to talk to, which is great. Patrick Marley is going to join us in just one moment, Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. There are some things going on, certainly, in the state. Former Governor Tommy Thompson is going to file paperwork today with the Federal Elections Commission to run for the U.S. Senate. We haven't talked about him in a long time. His filing will come on the heels of both Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald and state Senator Frank Lassie filing paperwork with the FEC to run for the U.S. Senate seat. U.S. Representative Mark Newman has, of course, already announced, and the only Democratic candidate is U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin of Madison. So we're going to look at that. We will look at Governor Walker's chief of staff leaving to run a recall election. Do you think that is a possibility? And let's also throw in the Brewers. They do have a big game tonight, and it is a big thing for a community and for a state to get the national attention, to have something to think about and root for, and to be the darling of perhaps the country. Huh? What do you think? So that doesn't look likely that we're going to find our astronauts. So this is the direction we're going. Put your phone calls in on what's going on politically, and we'll take calls on the Brewers. Tonight's a big night. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Patrick Marley is joining us now, Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have a lot to talk about in state news. We'll ask him about the Brewers as well. And you're stepping up to the plate with your phone calls. So take us in state direction, Brewers direction. Our guest we could just never find. And I'm sorry, it just doesn't happen very often. The Al Warden, the astronaut. We were going to talk about his trip to the moon. You can only do that with a few people. He's one of them. He's not here. We can't talk about going to the moon. So we're talking about other things. Patrick, hello. Thanks very much for helping us out here.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with Governor Tommy Thompson, who is filing evidently paperwork today with the Federal Elections Commission to run. Why do you think he made the decision to run? There was a time when he just owned politics in this state. Does he still?
Why is he running? You know, we've always known since he left as governor that he wanted to have another run. He's flirted with a lot of runs. He's played footsie with the press with a lot of runs for governor again for U.S. Senate last time around. This time it appears he's serious. I think that, you know, he loves campaigning. He loves being in government. So I think that's the reason that he wants to be in. Does he still own politics the way he used to? That is the big question that we'll see here. It's looking to be like there's a likelihood that we could have a very crowded Republican primary field. Obviously, the Republican Party is different now than it was when he was first elected in 1986. You know, we've seen the Tea Party revolution in the last couple of years, and he is definitely going to get a challenge to the right. He's already been portrayed as too moderate for the party. We shall see exactly how that plays out over the next year.
It's interesting. You talk about the crowded Republican primary field and not crowded Democratic field. Let's start with the Republican field. Why is it so crowded?
Well, you know, when a senator leaves office and you have an open seat, it's a rare opportunity. It's incredibly hard to challenge an incumbent. Ron Johnson was able to successfully do it last year, but I think you always see a lot of activity when something like that happens. And so I think there's sort of unique opportunities for everybody. And also, Ron Johnson having beat an incumbent last time, I think some Republicans see that as a model for how to win a race again. You know, and I think the Republican base in general is more fired up than Democrats might be right now. And when you have a fired up base, then you have candidates who get fired up who say, you know, this might be my moment.
Mm-hmm. And what about the Democratic field? Where are the Democrats, Patrick?
I don't think we're going to have a primary. I think that
really,
I would be very surprised if we have a primary that would really put it in play. I mean, you can always have somebody file, but in terms of someone very prominent, it would surprise me. But I suppose it's possible.
Well, what does that say about the Democrats? Are they not very organized? Are they not grooming people to run for office?
Well, I mean, you could make the argument that it shows that they are very organized, that they're able to clear the field without anybody else getting in the race. I don't know if that, though, as much as I think that Tammy Baldwin, to win a primary, would be your odds-on favorite. She's got an ability to raise a lot of money. She's well-known and popular in Dane County. And in a Democratic primary, you're pulling votes out of Dane County and Milwaukee County. I think it's very challenging for another Democrat to figure out how they would beat her in a primary.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to the governor, before we go to our crowded phone lines, his chief of staff announced that he would resign from his post last week to work for Walker's campaign and to prepare Walker for a possible recall election in January. What's the background story on that? Are they thinking there's going to be a recall?
Well, they ought to be thinking that there's going to be a recall because there's certainly a very strong likelihood that there will be an attempt made. So I don't know that they necessarily think the other side's going to get the signatures to do it, but I think they're smart enough to know they need to be prepared for the possibility of a recall election. And, of course, they're at an advantage right now in terms of being able to raise money and do all the preparation for a potential election, whereas the Democrats, you know, they can't really have a candidate until we know there's going to be an election. So it's smart on their part to do the fundraising, do everything that they would need to do in place in case there is a recall.
And when are we going to find out what the raid on the Archer home was all about?
I'd love to know. It's a secret investigation. The only time it becomes public is when something like that happens and you have nearly a dozen law enforcement officers at our house. But we don't know if that means they're close to making charging decisions or if that means they needed a bunch more evidence that they now have to go through. And, you know, we don't know if she's a target. We don't know what they're looking for. We, you know, there's a lot of questions out there, and I can't tell you when they're wrap it up.
Let's go to phone calls. Don in West Salem. Hi, Don.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess a couple statements. I think the governor should be recalled because the actions that he's taking really aren't the actions of a Republican. I think he doesn't represent the best of the Republican Party. I think if continued to go on, it's going to end up becoming a one-party system because they're financed by big money. I think they should we should shift our financing away from whatever and go back to everybody donate a dollar or something, and that's all the money that they get. They don't get contributions. As far as Tommy Thompson is concerned, I don't think anyone should have him in power. If you go back in time, he was the one that put a when he was governor in Wisconsin, he was the one that put the 3% cap on raises for teachers in Wisconsin. And while it wasn't supposed to affect anybody else in school districts, janitors, cooks, aides, whatever, ultimately it came down to where most districts ended up putting a cap on it at 3%. And this was back when the economy was still good and everybody was making big money, good money. A lot of people had jobs, and he put that cap on there, which at the time I worked in a small school district. A starting teacher made the same money that a janitor did, and a janitor was only making about $6 an hour or less.
Yeah, but the problem is 3% raise right now would look pretty darn good to a lot of public employees, Don.
I understand that, but if you have a person in office that back then put a cap on people's wages, you can't count on him to do anything else but...
Yeah. Patrick, what do you make of that? What are the issues that are a part of Tommy Thompson's governorship that may come back to be problematic for him in 2011?
Well, that's an issue. The QEO cap on wages is gone now, of course, and then after the Democrats took it away, we have the elimination of most collective bargaining in the state. So a lot has changed since he had that policy in place. I think he would run on that as an asset. He's going to tout that as a positive and say that he kept school district spending down by capping wages, and that 3.8% was a reasonable raise. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of people who disagree with that, but I don't know that that's going to be his biggest challenge in trying to win the Senate seat.
Thanks, John, for the call. Tom in Minocqua. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I have a clarifying question first. Patrick, could you explain how the recall process would work?
Sure. What happens is that any citizen goes to the State Government Accountability Board, which runs elections, files some very simple paperwork that says that they or a group that they're representing intends to recall the governor. The filing of that paperwork starts a 60-day clock, and then that group of people have to gather about 540,000 signatures. That number is set in state law, and it is 25% of the total votes cast in the last race for governor. So they have to get those signatures in 60 days. When they do that, they turn them in to the Government Accountability Board, and their staff then is going has about 30 days, I believe, to review those signatures. Now, in my mind, there's absolutely no way they will be able to complete that task in 30 days, because they couldn't do it in that time frame for the Senate recalls that they had last year, and those were talking about 25,000 to 60,000 signatures in each recall. So they're going to be dealing with far more signatures. They can't ask a court to extend the time, and then if they find that the signatures were validly submitted, that they have enough signatures, they would schedule an election 6 weeks out. If either the Republicans or the Democrats had more than one candidate, that election 6 weeks out would become a primary with the general election 4 weeks later. So after the Government Accountability Board said there should be an election, the election would occur either 6 or 10 weeks later, depending on whether there was a primary.
Hmm. Okay, so now the real question, presuming all that happens, can you, in your wildest imagination, identify a Democrat who could accomplish the defeat of a sitting governor at this point? Referring back to Kathleen's comment, basically about the lack of statewide powerful candidates in the Democratic Party.
There's absolutely a challenge for the Democrats on this front. Right now you have a very fired up Democratic base. Union members are very upset, both in the especially in the public sector, but also in the private sector. They've shown they're very organized. They've shown that they can get a lot of petition signatures that we haven't seen in the past. So I think that for them to get the signatures it's a challenge, but I think they could conceivably do it. Now, to your question, though, to defeat the governor is going to be a huge task for them. For one thing, during the 60-day period of gathering signatures, Governor Walker will have the ability to raise unlimited sums of money. All limits, normally the most you can give to a governor is $10,000. That completely falls away for that 60 days. He can raise any amount of money from anybody.
Wow.
Now he has to spend that within that 60 days. But he could, as soon as the 60-day period starts and he's a good fundraiser, we know that. He can start running ads, talking about the positive things that he's done, putting his message out about why he thinks that the collective bargaining changes were needed, how he thinks that he's helping the economy, do all those things to build up his reputation in the state, even before the Democrats know if there's going to be an election and have fielded a candidate. Mm-hmm. The Democrats who could run, we've got Mayor Tom Barrett. You've got former Dane County Executive Kathleen Falk. Her name gets mentioned. John Arpenbach, State Senator, his name gets mentioned. Peter Barca, the Assembly Minority Leader's name is out there, as is Kevin Conroy, who is in the biosciences industry and a fairly wealthy individual, but unknown to most people in the state.
Who would you choose, Tom?
I don't think any of those people can do it. I just think it's and I'm not necessarily opposed to the recall, but I just think it's a fool's errand. And the other thing to remember is, in addition to there not being a prominent challenger, the Democrats lost their recall campaign the last time. They unseated two senators?
But
that wasn't
three.
The goal.
Right.
It didn't happen. Right. And I just don't think it's going to happen again. I think you save what you got and go after the governor if you want to do that in 2 years. But I just think this is a foolish attempt.
Thank you, Tom, very much for the call. It is, one of our previous callers was talking about a system where everybody would pay a dollar and that's it. We are so far from that, aren't we, Patrick? This is an enormous amount of money in all of this. Holy cow.
It is an enormous amount of money. And if you put limits on how much candidates can raise, or you put a public financing situation in place where they don't raise money privately but taxpayers give them money, you're still going to have all of the outside groups. I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court has been very clear that they have a constitutional right to weigh in on elections. So even if you have that kind of situation, you're going to have tons and tons and tons of spending and tons and tons and tons of negative ads. And in many cases, you're not going to know where the money really came from.
I know. Oh, enough already, I think people are saying. It's just amazing. Tom, thanks. Alan in Grafton, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to thank you very much for being fair and fairly balanced. I tend to scream at your guests a little bit. I am a conservative, and I do listen to NPR. And I just wanted to thank you very much. You do a really good job.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was nice. All right. Greg in Madison. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, Greg. How are you?
Oh, it's beautiful here.
I know. Isn't it a beautiful day?
I want to thank you for having me on the air. I was just listening to this on the way from work. And I'm thinking, hey, maybe I can get a phone call in.
All right, you did. Go to it.
Well, here it is. I really would like America to, you know, wake up, you know, let the alarm clock go off. It should have been going off years ago. United States of America is a business. Like any other business, they elect the president, Obama, whoever, Kennedy. And their agenda is to make whoever runs this country, what is never talked about, the few people that run this whole country, they have the power of what's going on. You can recall all you want. They can put anybody in power to hold their money right. It's too late. I hate to say it. It's too late. We should have woke up a long time ago. It's their plan. It's their agenda. And if you don't go about it, they'll put out some other stuff like martial law or something to get this stuff across. It is too late, America. We can try, but they'll come up with a different kind of way to make it right. The people who actually own this country.
All right. Thank you very much for your comments, Greg. It's great to hear from you. Patrick, let's talk baseball just for the last couple moments here before we switch our guests. I'm very excited about the Brewers. I wonder if you think they will win tonight.
Oh, of course.
You do. You answered that right away. Of course.
Of course, sure.
And then the Milwaukee...
Actually, it's unpatriotic to say otherwise, isn't it?
I know. And then the Milwaukee Brewers will become the darlings of the country?
I think so. We got a good story to tell.
Good. Patrick, thank you for helping us out today. I appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yep.
Patrick Marley is the Bureau Chief, Madison Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel covers state news, and there has been a lot of it the last year, right? We're going to continue our conversation. Professor Kathleen Dolan, political science professor at UW-Milwaukee, is going to join us. She'll be looking at, a lot of things. We'll look at that Senate race, and we will also look at the presidential race and welcome your phone calls, too. The number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. In case you're wondering what we're doing, we couldn't find our guest, the astronaut, Al Warden, so we had to completely switch topics, and Chrissy and Rhonda have been very busy finding other guests for us to talk about, so that's what we're doing. And we're welcoming phone calls on politics. National has been obviously dominating in the news this week. Is Chris Christie, is he going to run? Is he not going to run? One of his advisors confirms to the New York Times that he is not running now. So it's he isn't. And this seems to be more definitive than some of the other words spoken. So we'll go with that right now. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And joining us now is Professor Kathleen Dolan, political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Professor Dolan, hello. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, sure. Good morning. Yeah.
Let's pick up on where we were with Patrick and with Craig. Where are the Democrats in the state of Wisconsin to run for Senate, to run in a possible recall election, to run for the governor if there is no recall election? Where are they?
By which you mean what? I guess
candidates. Where are their potential candidates?
Well, Tammy Baldwin has already announced for Senate. I think an early announcement clearly, you know, kind of moved Ron Kind off an idea of running. I think probably her coming out as early as it was maybe to kind of try to bring the Democrats behind her and scare other candidates off. It remains to be seen if there's anybody else out there, but I haven't heard many names.
Yeah. We were just wondering if the party is not trying to attract candidates for governor's race or more people interested in the Senate. They just seem to be a little dormant.
Well, there did seem to be a little bit of the wind kind of taken out of the sails when the recall elections did not result in the Democrats taking back the Senate. So it seems as if I can say we haven't heard a lot, right? But it seems like any plans to try to recall the governor, what had seemed to be most likely talked about over the summer was that the Democrats would try to align any recall of Governor Walker with the presidential election in November, so that the plans to start with the canvassing and then the petitions wasn't going to start right away when it was possible in January, but instead was going to maybe start a little later, maybe, you know, February, March, April, to make sure that the election itself could be aligned in November. We don't know if that's still on track. It's hard to tell what the sort of excitement level and motivation level is like. Certainly recalling the governor is going to be a very challenging undertaking, and it may be that the Democrats have decided, without announcing such, obviously, that they might want to work harder to make sure Obama wins the state. They might want to work harder to make sure Tammy Baldwin wins the Senate seat. But they're clearly not announcing publicly at this point what they want to do. But it does seem as if, you know, recalling the governor is going to be more challenging than less.
Well, they would have to announce pretty soon, wouldn't they, to get stuff rolling here?
You would think that they would have to start pretty soon because, and again, as I said, they can start, they can actually now start getting signatures on sort of what are these sort of prospective petitions. You know, I'm signing that I will sign. And so they can gather contact information and they can find out where people are who might want to sign on recall petitions. Then once, the governor's been in office for a year and a day, they could actually start doing that. But I think there was some concern about how to calculate the petition drives in such a way that they could then be certified and push the election off to November and not have to have a special election around.
Right.
I think the Democratic Party wanted to try to maximize turnout for both the president and a recall and do it at once. So that may require all sorts of timing that, you know, the public and we may just not be privy to or understand. But certainly raising the money that would be necessary for that sort of thing needs to get started if it hasn't already.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Senate race for a moment. And former Governor Tommy Thompson filing paperwork today with the FEC. Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Brian in Monona. I don't think Thompson is a long shot in a Republican primary, because Brian believes that loads of Democrats will vote in the Republican primary in 2012 to ensure that the conservative wing of that party cannot field a candidate. Do you think that's true?
Well, Brian's point, the Democrats can vote and likely would vote in the Republican primary, is certainly true and possible because of the open primary system we have here in Wisconsin. Democrats could vote in the Republican primary. If we get to a situation where Tammy Baldwin is either unopposed or seems to be the clear candidate for the Democrats, it may be that some Democrats feel that they want to participate in shaping an election by doing so on the other side. So at this point, we've got what? We've got Mark Newman. We've got former Governor Thompson. There may be other candidates. It would certainly not be unprecedented for Democrats to try to participate in the Republican primary. But quite frankly, I guess I think that the Republican primary will be a very interesting one on its face, because Governor Thompson has been out of electoral politics in the state for long enough now that he may have to overcome some sense that he is sort of, you know, a yesterday candidate. He's getting some flack from the real conservative wing of the party already. Club for Growth is, you know, seems to be mounting a pretty vigorous campaign against him. Mark Newman obviously will try to stake out the more conservative wing of the party. Mark Newman has not been successful for lots of things he's tried lately, so people may see him as, you know, the person who's always in there arguing, but he's not been successful in many, many years. I guess you would have to say at this point that Tommy Thompson probably has the greater chance to get that nomination, but maybe there's somebody else out there who's still waiting.
Let's go to some phone calls. Paul in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi, I'd like to just take issue, Kathleen, with a couple callers ago who said, and your present speaker also sort of indicated it, that the Democrats didn't do well in the recalls, in these past Senate recalls. Actually, we went into six Republican districts, strong Republican districts, and won two of them, and then held the three Democratic ones handily. So that's 5 out of 9 races. I think they did pretty well. Plus, made the majority of the Republicans in the Senate one vote, who last time in the budget process, that vote didn't even vote for the governor's budget. So it's pretty good advancement in the Senate, and a lot of issues. Now, you'll notice the governor hasn't put much legislation out there, has he?
No.
I'm off the phone.
Thank you. When I said that the Democrats didn't do well in the recalls, I guess what I was trying to articulate but didn't do with enough specificity is that they did not achieve what was, you know, their sort of maximum goal of retaking the Senate, getting all of the three seats that they needed to retake the Senate. So certainly in the recall election, in an unprecedented situation, the Democrats and people opposed to Governor Walker did an enormous amount of work, and they did a very successful job. I don't mean to suggest that they didn't. What they didn't do is achieve the maximum thing. And the point I was trying to make is, if they had retaken the Senate, that would have just raised the energy level and the commitment and the motivation, because, A, it would have stymied the governor for the rest of his term, but, B, it also would have, I think, kept in place all of that grassroots fervor to move forward and try to recall the governor. I think that the move to recall the governor has experienced a little bit of a deflation, because that momentum was lost at some point. Now, the very close split in the Senate is going to make legislating challenging for the governor and for the Republicans, and that may well also serve that purpose. But I just think politically and electorally, I was speaking to a different set of goals.
Jim is next. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
How are you doing today?
All right. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, I think the problem with the government is, and one of the biggest problems in the country, was NAFTA and the free trade agreement. They've shipped thousands of jobs overseas to China and everywhere else, and it's hurt the economy more than anything. And the politicians we have elected don't care one bit about the people. They're a bunch of lawyers, and they've got all the little perks and lobbyists and big business pushing them this way so they can put more money in their pocket. I don't think any of them care for the people.
I think there's a strong sentiment. There are a lot of people who would agree with that. People are pretty disaffected, I think. Many people are, Professor Dolan.
Sure. I mean, this is what we're seeing here in the country because of the really bad economic times. It's not surprising at all. Confidence across the board in the United States, you know, the public expressing confidence in, you know, success for the future is very low. Consumer confidence is relatively low. Distrust of government is high. Evaluations of President Obama are becoming more negative. Evaluations of Congress are incredibly negative, sort of historic lows,
yes,
in terms of support for Congress. So people clearly are very frustrated and are articulating that frustration. The idea that they don't care about us, the idea that they're working for somebody else,
mm-hmm,
you know, who that somebody else is, of course, shifts. Right, you know, I don't see them as working for me. I don't see them as working for my interests. I see them working for other interests. They you know, Congress and the president clearly are working to achieve some set of policy goals. The part of the problem and part of what leads to the frustration
we have about 5 seconds
is the nature of the divided government we have, and the Democrats and the Republicans are just so far from each other,
yeah,
in terms of what they see as the solutions, that it's impossible to get anything done.
Yeah. Thank you, Professor Dolan, so much for joining us.
Sure.
Professor Kathleen Dolan, political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for fashioning what turned out to be a pretty interesting hour without the original guests. Thank you. Until tomorrow.